Vernon, Texas, home of the Gospel Radio Network. My name is Chip Horton, and we have in the studio with us today Richard Rutledge, and we certainly welcome each of you to the broadcast. We know that there are several that are already signed on and listening this morning, and so we welcome my wife, Jody. Glad that you're able to listen this morning. Hope your morning's going well. I know that Jeff is probably listening over there in Virginia, and so we welcome you to the broadcast. Hope your surgery recovery is going well. Also, my parents normally listen down there in Brentwood, Tennessee, and so we're glad that y'all are aboard, too. Feel free to get into the chat window and let us know that you're there, and even add some comments along the way if you'd like to. We'll be in Mark chapter 5 just here in a few minutes, and so we invite you to go ahead and be turning to page 1137 in your Bibles, and we'll be getting ready to get started right away. Before we do that, we always like to try to go to our bulletin board and address some of those things that are going on around us. And so I'll start this morning with those things that are going to be happening here right away at the Atlanta congregation. We're looking at the men's retreat that's coming up on February 19th and 20th, and that's always a great time. They have left a phone number here if you're going to be able to be out at Camp Ida for that. I think it starts Friday night at 6 o'clock with supper, and there's a lesson at 7. And then the next morning, breakfast at 8 and Devo at 9. And so if you can make it for that, you can call them at 903-796-3371. Kind of give them a head count so they'll know how many burgers to cook or how many eggs to fry or whatever. Again, that's the 19th and the 20th. And our co-host this morning, Richard Rutledge, is going to be there delivering those lessons. So we look forward to that event taking place. That's always a good time of fellowship for the men. And then the ladies have a ladies' day on Saturday. Even as the men are finishing up, they're going to be starting their registration at 9:30 that morning. They're at the building at the Atlanta Church of Christ. Holly McCormack, the wife of their good preacher there, John McCormack, will be leading the ladies there on this February the 20th event. And so we want to make sure and invite you to that. There's child care available for ages 2 and up. And you can use that same telephone number to get in touch with them, that same 796 number that we gave you just a moment ago. They have lunch going on at noon, and certainly this is going to be an opportunity for the ladies to really enjoy a time of fellowship together as they talk about the wrinkle-free woman. I like that title. That's brings me cause to think about some good sermon topics. And then, starting on the following day, February the 21st to the 24th, Brother Richard is starting a gospel meeting there. And we're going to have several lessons brought that week, lessons learned along the way. And he's told me about a couple of those already, and I tell you what, you'd be blessed to be there and listen to some of these. And so if you're available to go through there, we recognize that you're probably not able to go on the Lord's Day because of your obligations in your home congregation. But Monday to Wednesday at 7 o'clock each night, they want to have your attendance there. And so be aware that that begins the 21st there at the Atlanta congregation in Atlanta, Texas. Richard, what have you got on there on your side?
Well, that same weekend is the 28th Annual Shenandoah Lectures, the Superiority of the Christian System. That's the overall theme this year. That is February 19th through the 21st. It'll start Friday the 19th. Each day they're going to have sort of subtopics that'll fall under this overall theme of the superiority of the Christian system. Friday they're going to have the purpose and design of religion. And then that evening, the clarion call for true religion. Several lessons are going to be delivered in each of those that day. Then Saturday the 20th, the establishment of true religion and its struggles. Followed by, after lunch, lessons dealing with Jesus' vision of religion. And then after supper, we'll have men's visions of religion. And then Sunday is going to focus all day with He That Does the Will of My Father, with several lessons throughout the day as well. Again, this is at the Shenandoah Church of Christ in San Antonio, Texas, 11026 Warsbach Road, for the 28th Annual Shenandoah Lectures. If you want more information, give them a call, 210-696-5532.
A lot going on this time of the year. We're blessed people indeed. We have an announcement here for Ladies Day coming up on February the 27th, coming to you from the West Hill Church of Christ, and Christy Woodall is going to be directing that particular event that day, bringing lessons as it pertains to growing up in Christ. And so they have invited you to this event, which begins at 8:30 on February the 27th, and they have left a phone number for you. If you think you'd like to be able to be involved in that, please use this number and get in touch with them. You can call 903-872-5696. Again, that's a Ladies' Day at the West Hill Church of Christ down there in Corsicana, Texas, being led by Christy Woodall.
And March 4th through the 6th, the 2016 Greater Shreveport-Bossier Lectures are going to be taking place. That is March 4th through the 6th. The theme is, Oh, to be like Him. This year, the host congregation is the Blanchard Congregation, but the lectureship will be held, as usual, at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ. They're located at 5661 Shed Road in Bossier City, Louisiana. And you can get more information and flyers on this, if you would like, by giving them a call at 318-741-3016.
All right, and also we have an announcement from our good brethren up in New Boston, Texas. Cody Westbrook is coming to town, and this is going to be during the period of March 20th through the 23rd, and he's going to be holding their spring meeting there at the New Boston Church, and he's going to be bringing Sunday Prophecy of the King of the Kingdom, and the Citizens of the Kingdom. Boy, I bet that's going to be incredible. And then, again, we may recognize that we may not be able to be there on Sundays, but Monday through Wednesday, nightly, again at 7 p.m., you're invited out to the New Boston congregation, and they're going to have these following topics. Monday, how to enter the kingdom. Tuesday, how to stay in the kingdom. And Wednesday, the future of the kingdom. And so I know Brother Cody will do a great job with that. You can get in touch with them on the web at newbostoncoc.org, or you can call them at 903-628-2891. I bet Brother Kevin would be glad to talk to you. So, again, that's a gospel meeting, the New Boston Church of Christ, March the 20th through the 23rd with our good brother Cody Westbrook.
And then March the 27th through the 31st is the 50th annual, 50 years. Mm-hmm. Celebration of the Memphis School of Preaching annual lectureship. The general theme this year, Preach the Word.
Preach the Word.
And this is going to be at the Memphis School of Preaching. They're at the Forest Hill Irene Road there in Memphis, Tennessee. You can get more information by going to msop.org or giving them a call at 901-751-2242. I know a lot of folks are looking forward to this event. I was looking on the back at the schedules, and it looks like there's going to be just right around 100 different lessons.
Wow.
That are scheduled to be taught and preached that during this. That's the ones, the general lessons, the ladies-only classes, specialty classes as well. But it is going to be a big week there.
Can you imagine having to edit that book?
Yes. I don't want that job, and but somebody's going to do a good work with it. But, again, that is the 50th year Memphis School of Preaching annual lectureship, Preach the Word.
Mm. Awesome.
And that's all I have over here, Chip.
All right. Well, there's a lot going on, and we've got some announcements going on into April. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm just got down to the end of February marked in my calendar right now. I'm doing good to get into March.
that reminds me, at the end of April, let's go ahead and throw this out there for Focal Point, that'll be an event just like going to the Memphis lectures that you're going to have to plan for. If you're going to be there all week, you might be scheduling some time off to be able to participate in it. But it's April the 30th through May the 5th, and it's a workshop. Mm. It's not just lessons being taught. I mean, it's designed as a workshop in mind for preachers, elders, ladies, youth, youth workers. There's something for everyone at it, and it'll begin on Saturday this year, and it's going to conclude on Thursday, May the 5th. But you can get more information about the Focal Point Workshop by giving them a call at 512-353-2487, or you can go online and get information and register at univcofc.com.
All right. I'll be planning for that. I've heard the brethren talking about how big that's continuing to get every year, and so they'll be busting out of the building there for long. Have to be renting a civic center somewhere or something, you know.
I do believe that this year they'll probably outgrow. Last year was extremely, full as well. People taking advantage of it, to the fact that there's no expense. Right now they're able to still offer it free because the congregation there is covering all the expenses. But it is a great opportunity.
You know, I bet those brethren down there at San Marcos love the brethren.
Yeah, exactly. We know that they do for what they're working hard to do.
Tell you what. All right, well, we're going to do the little segue thing now into chapter number 5 of Mark. And there's a rumor going around, Brother Richard, that this is your favorite chapter in Mark.
It is. Before we get started, though, Mark has a comment here. He's asking for prayers for Floyd Johnson. He's the minister at the Huntington Park congregation there in Shreveport. Hmm. Found this out yesterday at the preacher's meeting, but his wife, Louise, has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and she's not doing very well. So if y'all would definitely keep that family in your prayers, Floyd and the family, as well as the extended family as well, from up in this area, keep them in your prayers as they're going through this difficult time.
Amen. Well, we're making this beautiful transition into chapter number 5 in Mark. And yesterday we had the opportunity in chapter 4, Brother Ryan and myself, to begin there at the seaside in chapter 4 and then end in the sea on the way across to the east side. And so we come out of chapter 4 with the wild sea being tamed. And the last comment there in the break in chapter verse 41, excuse me, is this: what manner of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Well, I'll tell you what manner of man this is. This is the Savior of the world. This is Emmanuel, God with us. This is the Son of God, as he would address himself even in this chapter today, the Lord, in verse number 19. That's who this is. And so we're going to see the wild sea has been tamed by the Creator. Even as we read in John chapter 1, without him was not anything made. And so then we're going to see in another amazing event, this wild man that's going to be meeting him over on the east side of the sea, in the land of the Gadarenes. And no man could tame him or chain him. But we're going to see this same individual that calmed the sea calm this man as well. And so I tell you what. Instead of reading all 20 verses, Brother Richard, let's just read down to, say, about verse 5 and make some comments along the way.
Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, not even with chains. Because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stone.
Well, here we're at the other side of the sea, this sea that was calmed. And so here we have the opportunity to see another individual that has sought out the Lord's help. We're seeing that everywhere we go, really. And certainly Mark points that out, as others have certainly ably applied, showing that Mark is a book of action. You know, you get tired, really, reading the book of Mark, because mm-hmm. Jesus is always on the go. He's always on the run. And so here, immediately, it looks like his first foot off the boat onto the shore, here he is. Immediately there met him a man out of the tombs. And notice where his dwelling is. His dwelling wasn't in town with the townspeople. His dwelling was in the caves, in the tombs. Your mind goes back to even, the tomb where Jesus was laid, that which was hewn out of stone, you know, this cave-dwelling type area. And it says that no man could bind him. And so, as I understand it, just by overviewing the work of Jesus, this seems to be the worst case of a demon possession that I remember reading of. Is that your understanding as well?
Not only that, we see this. We see that he's called Legion, you know, right. So maybe even reference to the great number of possession. But the fact, I believe it's the most alarming individual that comes to Jesus, in my mind. You know, that's why I've shared with you the idea that this is in one of my favorites, because I title it Where the Wild Things Are, because of that, you know, children's story of Max crossing across the sea, coming to a strange land filled with wild things. And so here, right. Jesus crossing the sea and coming to the place of the wild man. But there was something here, if you think about this man. In Luke tells us that this man was a man who was naked. He had wore no clothes, it says in Luke 8:27, and when he went forth to the land, met him out of the certain man which had devils a long time, and wore no clothes, and neither did he abide in the house but in the tombs. And then here in Matthew says he was an exceedingly fierce man in Matthew 8:28, and Mark tells us this guy had been cutting himself night and day. And so when I picture this guy, and it's very, the Bible paints these images, and think how alarming it is now when this beast of a man who's been living in the tombs for some time, who of great strength, and cutting himself, he's going to have just cuts and blood and scabs and, you know, filth and stench, and just imagine that man coming up to you.
Just what would be our response? Death, right?
Yeah, the smell of death is upon him because he's living there. It reminds me even of a saying one time that the old Christian brother was asked by another. He said, "Oh, I see you're still in the land of the living." He said, "No, I'm in the land of the dying.
Yeah,
but I'm hoping to go to the land of the living."
That's right. Good
point. You know, and this guy was in the land of the dead.
Mm.
That's where he made his dwelling place, and the smell of death is upon him.
Well, I'm telling you, something that I kind of picked up on in verse number 5, the scripture says, Mark records, and always, night and day, he was in the mountains and the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. Evil never rests.
Evil never rests, and what we see is a picture of hopelessness.
Mm.
You know, when people get that way today, you know, they get into a depressed state. And, you know, they get into this self-mutilation, cutting and crying out. Here he is. It's as if the idea of 2 Timothy chapter 2, you know, those who are warring against themselves, those who oppose themselves. And we have this war that's raging within this one. Mm-hmm. There's this aspect of humanity of this man who is still there. And doesn't like who he's become. He's trying to get some relief, but there's no hope. Without God and without Christ, there's no hope. And now hope has arrived.
That's right. Hope steps out of the boat, and he meets him exceedingly. And so look at, let's say, verses 6 through 9.
And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried out with a loud voice, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you, by God, that you do not torment me." For he said to him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." And he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many."
We are many. And so, as you said, hope arrives. That's exactly what we see in Jesus. Everywhere he goes, hope arrives, and that's why he's always thronged. That's why the houses are always filled. You know, when the paralytic was let down through the roof, they couldn't get through the door because there's so many people, you know. And so everywhere he goes, he is thronged because people want hope. You know, you see these commercials for Wounded Warriors and the Shriners Hospitals. You know, people want hope. you know, and they're asking us to help them with hope. And so it's nothing uncommon here to see people wanting hope. And so they throng Jesus looking for hope. And you know what I saw here in verse number 7? It seems like the same admonition is made by the demons that we saw in the synagogue, even in the first chapter.
Mm-hmm.
The same, almost the same words. You could almost place it together here. So they recognize the deity of Jesus. They recognize the power. You see this falling down at the feet of the divine one, God with us. And again, I've got written in my Bible here, James 2:19.
Right.
Even the devils fear and tremble. You know,
we
see that here.
Exactly. I also think about this idea of Romans 10:9-10, where so many people will wrest that scripture to their own destruction and teach a faith-only doctrine. Fact.
That's right.
Doctrine is not that works is dead, James faith tells us.
On the ceases here. And so same way in the synagogue, there has to be what's about to happen. See this thou. Lazarus in John 11. The power of the man, and it's done. The power of God. I noticed a lot going on with the pronouns here. We don't have a lot of time to talk about that, but notice how it changes. I adjure thee, torment me not, yeah, my name. And now it's we are many. And so we start to see this unfolding of what's about to happen. And it's a powerful thing to behold.
All the deep. Told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had the demon possessed and had the legion, sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it happened to him who had been demon possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. And when he got into the boat, he who had the demon possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim it in Decapolis, all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled.
All marveled. You know, everywhere Jesus goes, they marvel. They're astonished. They cause great wonder. And I've got underlined several times in this one chapter, Isaiah 9:6. You know, wonderful is his name. You know, he causes great wonder and amazement everywhere he goes. So the demon begs and please let us come out and go into the swine, you know. And so notice the permission. I like the way the New King James puts it there. They ask permission. All the devils ask permission of the Most High. And why is that? Because verses like Psalm 24 and verse 1 says that it all belongs to God. And so we ask permission. We see that going on here, that we may enter into the swine. So they've got their next object pointed out. They're headed toward the swine, and so immediately, it was another lesson, I think, back in Matthew, but I did a little bit of a word search on the word immediately, And just about every time in the New Testament that I found it, you know, not every time, but a great number of times, it had to do with Jesus' miracles. It all happens immediately. He did this, and it happened immediately. Forthwith, Jesus granted their wish. And so he gave his permission to go into this great number of swine. And so here's this number of 2,000 swine, and I can only imagine what this must have looked like. I'm sure it scared the people to death as we see what's going on toward the end of this particular section. Run down the hill into the sea. And so now this demon that would want to torment a man or torment others, even as you see in Mark chapter 1, they themselves don't want to be tormented. You know, isn't that kind of a hypocritic thing to behold? And so they run down the hill, they run into the sea and are drowned, and that's the end of them. Come out, they came out, and now they're gone. Well, as you can imagine, here's this man's livelihood. I don't think the Jews had much to do with swine, so perhaps we're talking about a Gentile group of people. Maybe that's noticing this, maybe had heard rumors of Jesus, had heard rumors of this power and amazing abilities. But nevertheless, here they have just witnessed maybe even his livelihood gone. And I couldn't help but think about Demetrius. You remember in Acts chapter 19, the same thing. Please get out of here. You know, you're killing my business, you know. And so maybe that's got a little bit to do with what's going on with their response when they come out. You know, maybe they think, well, if he did that to their swine, maybe that'll happen to my swine. You know, there's a lot of emotions here.
Right. Maybe there's, thinking only of the monetary, which a lot of folks do. I mean, we think about those things first. Even we can see a similar thought with, Lot.
Right.
You know, it was choice. It was the material first, and maybe that's what it was. But I mean, they had to understand. They saw the change in this man. It says that they saw him, this man who was naked, he's now clothed. Mm-hmm. You know, this man who was going about violently, now sitting. Mm-hmm. And this man who was out of his mind, now in his right mind. There is a drastic difference in the life of an individual. An honest life who comes in contact with Jesus. There's a drastic difference in their life, and they see it, but they don't heed it. And sometimes people do that. Peter tells us that they're going to be those, your old friends, mm-hmm. who are not going to be your friends because you're not running with the same excess of ride as you used to.
Right.
You know, and so maybe, mm-hmm. This is what we're having here. They know that there's been a drastic change in this man, but they're not willing to see the benefits to them, and so they say leave.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Jesus, he grants their wish too.
Right.
And so he gets into the boat, and you see this tender and compassionate moment, even in verse number 19. And he comes to the boat and he says, please, Jesus, let me go with you. You know, can I go? Can I follow you? Can I be with you? And certainly, man, there's a bunch of points there. You know, I mean, with Jesus is where safety is found. With Jesus is where salvation is found. And so, even as Jesus would say in Matthew 23 about gathering them under his wing like a chicken, there is compassion, there is safety, all those things rest with Jesus. And so why not want to go with him? But, Jesus had a better plan. Jesus said that this man could go and testify to those others in the city what happened. And so he would be living, breathing testimony, even like we see over in John 11 and 12 with Lazarus. You know, Lazarus was living, breathing testimony of what had happened, and, they sought to kill him and Jesus both, kill the witness, kill the messenger, And anyway, so we lose contact here at this particular point, but he was left behind to minister and tell others what had taken place. And so in verse 20, he began to publish it. He did exactly what Jesus asked him to do. And, isn't that us? If Jesus asked us to go and teach, don't we have to go and teach?
Right.
We have that responsibility.
And he did. The idea here is this man, I think of Philippians 1, where in 23 and 24, Paul says, I have a desire to go and to be with Christ, but it was more needful for me to remain here for you.
Right.
And that's what we see here. He had a desire to be with Christ, but there was something that was more needful for him to carry on with.
Right.
And the needful thing was to go and to show and to tell. Go over into that area. We have that responsibility. But Luke says that he tells him to go and show them the great things.
Mm.
And here he says, go and tell them. So everybody likes show and tell, right?
Right, right.
And so that's what he was going to be. He was going to be the show and tell.
That's right.
And he goes and he does this. And it's as the early church in Acts chapter 8, when those that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. He goes into the region of the 10 cities, to Decapolis, and starts proclaiming it there and showing and telling people all the great things that the Lord had done for him.
And again, what's the reaction? The people marveled. Astonishment, wonder, amazement. Everywhere he goes, the same reaction is had. And so great marveling and amazement and astonishment is here within the Decapolis then. Demonic to missionary in just a few minutes. The next section that we come across, we meet a young man named Jairus. And so if you want to read, brother, verses 21 to 24, we'll cover that.
Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and he begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live." And so Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him.
So again, you know, here's yet another plea that Jesus grants, another request that was made by this leader of the synagogue. You see in the language here, one of them, so it must have been several rulers of the synagogue, and so this Jairus is one of those individuals. And so he would come out as Jesus would arrive here. I'm led to believe that this is probably Capernaum, as they would go back to the other side. The language here, even in Matthew chapter 9, says his own city. And certainly many of us agree that that's probably Capernaum, because I look down into chapter 6 and I see his own country, and we come to find out that's Nazareth. So we're probably talking about this region, even where Peter's mother would be attended to by Jesus. And so here he is arriving back on the other side, and he is welcomed, even as Luke's account would record in Luke chapter 8 and verse 40. With a great throng of people, he is met again. Everywhere he goes, people want to be around Jesus. And so Jairus, he comes out and he falls at his feet, recognizes who he is and the great power that he has. And he says, you know, my little 12-year-old daughter, as we would find out a little later in the passage, his only daughter, as Luke chapter 8 and verse 42 would give us. She is at the point of death. She is on her deathbed. She is sick nigh unto death. And so he has this tender, compassionate plea of Jesus, please come with me and heal her. And so the great faith of this Jairus is seen. And so basically, before we're kind of interrupted here with this next particular scene, we see Jesus agreeing, say, okay, and let's be on our way. And so he meets Jairus. He accepts this greeting, and he accepts his request, and they're both on their way. And it's just here where we see yet another event taking place, and we'll quickly read that between verses 25 and 34.
Speaking of interruptions, Chip, our listeners, let you know we're having just a little bit of technical difficulty. Maybe you're getting a little interruptions with some music coming in and out from time to time. We're working on that. Don't give up on us. Stick with us, and we'll make our way through this this morning. Hopefully, won't have many more of those.
I have to get with Al Gore about fixing that internet thing.
Yeah. All right. Verses 25 to 30. Now, a certain woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from the physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For, she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. And immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt her body that she had healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that the power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes?
And so here we see again this individual that comes to Jesus looking for hope, looking for the possibility. I mean, as far as the Jewish law goes, you know, you look back into Leviticus 15, technically she was unclean, you know, and here she's, you know, maybe seen as an outcast, you know, if I've got this right. And so maybe that's why she comes from behind, you know, so maybe she's not seen and recognized by so many for what she really is. She has suffered, verse 26, she has suffered many things. And so you can imagine what may have taken place, you know, with all this hemorrhaging. You know, you can imagine leeches, you can imagine cuttings, you could imagine various things like a guinea pig that maybe were tested on her, and she had spent everything she had trying to get well, and nobody could heal her. Nobody could help her. Like with the demoniac, nobody could help him. But here the great physician arrives, and we see hope again arriving, and we could really jump off into some James chapter 2 right here, because here we see an active faith. She says, I believe, and I know that if I can touch his garment, just touch his garment, that I'll be healed. And she acted on that faith. You know, ultimately, like maybe we could say, we might ultimately see Naaman do. You know, he would finally go through with what he was told to do. And certainly we know the outcome of that. But here, an active faith reaches out. And certainly that's the acknowledgement that Jesus would make. But again, I don't want to read too much into this, but notice over in verse number 9, Jesus said, what is thy name? This is a public recognition, right? And I couldn't help but think this is the same thing here, because I know good and well he knew who touched him, right? And so now all those that are thronging him, you know how many are there because of the next verse. You know, they said, we don't know who touched you. Look at all the people around us. But Jesus knew. And so Jesus brings this point to all the people that are looking. And straightway, there's that immediacy again, even like verse 13. Later in verse number 42, this straightway, this immediacy that happens, Jesus doesn't do anything halfway. He doesn't say, take a pill, call me in the morning. Right. Everything happens immediately. She knew, she felt in her body that she was healed, that she was better. And so we see this great power, this virtue, even as the King James says here, going out of the Christ. And so here's this public confession. And so then in verse 31, you know, when his disciples are standing there, he says, we don't know who it was. And Jesus turns around and sees her. Verse number 32, he sees her. And again, I think about the look that Peter got there, you know, when the judgment was going forth, and he would deny the Lord three times. That glare, you know, the look of Jesus is an amazing thing to behold. And so they made eye contact, and again, the people would marvel. And so his great comment in verse number 34, he says, "Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace." And behold of that plague. Immediately, she was healed. I love to read this particular event because of the immediacy. You know, when we come up out of the watery grave, having obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, the death, burial, and resurrection that we read about in 1 Corinthians 15, it's not the next morning, you know, when we get up and we're cleansed of our sins. It's an immediate thing, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Happens right away. It's the promise of God. It's the operation of God, I believe it is, over in Colossians 2, about verse 12 or 13, to take away the transgression. And he does it immediately, just like he does everything else.
I think even with this, we might even see that even the immediacy of it caused fear in her. Because she does it, you know, when he turns around and she, he asks who, it says that she, this woman, it says, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, falls down and worships him. You know, this idea of it as well, she knew that she'd be made whole, but almost this idea that it was immediate. She knew immediately that she was healed.
Absolutely.
And she was immediately healed. But the fact is, it may have even caught her off guard to some degree, as we see her reaction.
Absolutely. Fear and trembling. And so, again, as we mentioned, you know, she said, she acted on this faith, and Jesus said, it is thy faith that's made thee whole. And so he gives this proclamation, go forth and be whole. Well, we get back into where we left off at verse number 24 here. And I guess we're down to about 10 or 15 minutes, brother. So let's read verses 35 to 43 and finish this wonderful chapter out.
And while he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? And as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid, only believe. And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and he saw a tumult, and those who had wept and wailed loudly. And when he came in, he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child, and those who were with him, and he entered to where the child was laying. And then he took the child by the hand, and he said to her, Talitha kumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age. And there they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and he said that something should be given her to eat.
Wow, that's an amazing thing to behold, because here Jairus has come out. Remember we read that earlier between verses 21 and 24. He's worshipped the Master. He's fallen before his feet. He's acting on his faith that he has in Jesus. He's coming forth and asking of this to be done, and now the word comes out, she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, as I understand it, we can really see that this test of his faith. You know, you have come out in faith, but now you've received word, and they've even said, don't bother him anymore. And Jesus says, don't be afraid. You know, again, we're reminded, as we always are throughout these great four books that we're studying, Jesus is a compassionate one, and he's concerned about our comfort and our care. And man, as Chris did so recently in Revelation, that's what Revelation's all about, compassion and comfort. We need to know that the victory's already won. Man, Jesus is such a comforting one. And so this comfort is given. And so here we are with Peter, James, and John, and Mom and Dad. We go into the room and notice that there's all this great weeping and lamenting and this great commotion that's going on. And when he makes this announcement, they turn to laugh. So these same people that are weeping and overcome with grief, they suddenly turn to laughter. They ridicule, even to scorn, as the King James says. And so he goes in, and notice what is going to be beheld here by mother, father, and then the circle of three, Peter, James, and John, the same ones that were there on the Mount of Transfiguration. And so they see this take place. She does rise. She does get up. And immediately we're drawn to verse 42. There's that word again, immediately, straightway. The same thing you saw in verse 13, the same thing you saw in verse number 29. Jesus doesn't do anything slowly, you know, and I think that's particularly important as you look at the book of Mark, because you see that a lot, immediately, straightway, forthwith. And so Jesus is always on the go, and he doesn't do anything halfway. He's comforting. He's one that causes amazement and marvel and here, astonishment. And so the 12-year-old, this only daughter. She stands up. And what do we do now? Well, let's give her something to eat. And so now those that were, verse 40, laughing, I don't imagine they're laughing now, do you? I imagine that they are marveling, they are amazing, and I bet it was all they could do to keep from running out and publishing it in the streets.
Right. Yeah, I think about this, Chip, you talk about compassion. That's what we see throughout this chapter.
Yep.
Jesus having compassion first on those who are, he shows love to the unlovable.
Yeah.
There with the demonic man. An individual who apparently no one has shown compassion. Mm-hmm. We see what they had done in the past. They tried to bind him up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't compassion. They're just trying to tame him or chain him.
Right.
And he has compassion. The woman with the blood issue, an outcast for years now because of her unclean status. And no compassion until she touches the garment. She's afraid. She's fearing and trembling. Mm-hmm. And Jesus turns around and he comforts her.
That's right.
And then here, Jairus with his daughter and the idea that she's dead. And he comforts him. Don't be afraid. Mm-hmm. Compassion and comfort offered by Jesus all the way through. We see the beginning of the chapter. One who is called out from among the dead, and one at the end of the chapter who is called back from the dead,
mm-hmm.
You know, as these bookends of chapter 5.
Absolutely. And you could even back up a couple of verses into the calming of the sea.
Yes.
He was giving comfort, you know. He said, Master, we're perishing, you know, and he gives great calm. He gives great comfort to them. And so here we see the same thing taking place, and astonishment is the outcome. Everywhere he goes, he shows compassion. He shows this great comfort that he gives. He's doing everything immediately. He's showing his power. He's making it known everywhere he goes, and it happens immediately. And so, again, as we say, those that were once laughing, they're not laughing now. And so what an amazing way to end this particular chapter, this particular study, with this great healing. And so, again, I'd have to say, Richard, just like you, this might very well be one of my favorite chapters as well. It certainly is powerful, and we've been blessed to be able to sit together and study it together this morning. I love this particular passage of Scripture. You know, another thing that I thought of, and you know, don't want to stretch too far, but, you know, it seems like the same type of a scene, if I'm not mistaken, when Jesus arrives with Mary and Martha, mm-hmm. in John 11. What was going on there? Crying, weeping, lamenting, and wasn't even a comment made, you know, if you would have been here sooner, you know, he wouldn't be dead. And so even a finger pointing or finger wagging even at that point, and he would say, you know, he's sleeping, you know. And, you know, maybe we could do a study one day about this particular sleep, you know, looking forward to the resurrection. You know, it is just a momentary thing where the spirit leaves the body, and we look forward to that great resurrection as opposed to a second death.
Right.
So what a great study this has been. We appreciate so very much you being with us today for this particular study. We look forward to tomorrow. Our brother Chris is going to do a fantastic job, I know, in chapter number 6 of Mark, and so we look forward to that study tomorrow. We're so very grateful for those of you that have stuck with us today. I know we've had a few issues digitally, and so we're thankful that you're still with us, and we look forward to a great study tomorrow. Continue to listen today, because you have the opportunity coming up right after us to hear Kevin Ruiz. You have the opportunity to hear John McCormack, and so much going on throughout the day. I know Rick Popejoy does a great job also at the Wednesday appointment, as he talks about hallowed be thy name, that all the names of deity, and he does a great job with that. And I don't know how he does it, but he turns right around and he does the online academy studies, even at the 1 o'clock hour, or the 12:30 hour, I guess. So Rick's a busy man. You've got the Telstar archives that are playing all throughout the day. So you've got a great day of programming in front of you. You know, if you're working out in the yard, keep that thing going. If you're in the office, keep it going. And we're certainly glad that you have been with us today on the Gospel Radio Network, and we invite you to be with us throughout the day and even join us tomorrow at this same hour as Brother McElyea brings you Mark chapter 6. So thank you for your comments in the chat window this morning. Thank you for your attentiveness, and we certainly are grateful for any word of mouth that you would use today to pass along the word about the Gospel Radio Network. Tell others about the network, because after all, that's the greatest advertisement that we have. So we love you all, and we appreciate each one of you, and we look forward to our next appointment together here on Mornings for the Master. We love you, and we'll see you later.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.